copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I believe that parents and adults should be talking to young people about sex, and there are three particular reasons why, which if you have your notes, you'll see them there. The first is everyone else is talking to them about sex. Everyone else is. Young people spend 50 hours a week average in media. 50 hours a week average in media. 75% of TV shows have sexual content. It comes at an average of 8 to 10 times an hour. So think of those 50 hours, 8 to 10 times an hour, there'll be some reference to sex. 40% of song lyrics have sexual content. In one study, 20% of teens reported sending or posting nude pictures of themselves. So when you think about media, media is saturated with sex. Music is saturated with sex. But even their communication with each other has sex in maybe ways that we wouldn't anticipate. That 20% of teens sent some kind of picture or received one. Then we could talk about Facebook profiles and the pressure that young people feel to be sexualized in the way they portray themselves on Facebook and on media. In fact, one study showed that 49% of teen girls on one particular social media site posted pictures when they were wearing provocative clothing, because that's one of the ways to sell yourself in media. And there was a study done of 11 to 17-year-old girls, and they said that only the 11-year-olds didn't feel pressure from media to have sex. So this is the young people live in this pressure cooker of information coming at them all the time, and everyone is talking about that. And also, you heard in other presentations that 35% of all internet downloads are related to pornography, and 25% of all search engine queries are related to pornography, or about 6 to 8 million searches a day. So young people are growing up saturated with everyone talking about sex. But the second reason we need to talk to them is no one else is talking to them about how God sees it, right? No one else. Where in those places are they going to hear God's perspective on sex? The prevailing picture is that everyone is doing it. If you see something online or in a movie, it looks like everyone is doing it, which, by the way, is not even true, because according to studies, this is a study done in America, they found that 57% of girls, 58% of boys ages 15 to 19 have never had intercourse. So over half of high schoolers do not have sexual experience, and 20% of college graduates don't. Now, obviously, it's much lower than we would expect, but the idea that everyone is doing it is actually not a true idea. So one of the messages is everyone is doing it. Another message is there are no boundaries to this area. So we've already talked about this, but you have someone like Miley Cyrus saying, I don't even know how to categorize myself. I'm not oriented towards women. I'm not oriented to men. I'm pan-gender. So there is even new names that are being made up for this. And the third thing is that there's no consequences. So that's the prevailing message they're getting from people around them. So everyone else is talking about it. No one else is talking about God's perspective. And here's the third thing that very few parents realize. We as parents, or as we're talking to parents, that a parent's voice has much more weight than they realize. They think, I'm just a small voice in this huge channel. I really can't say anything that could make a difference. But that's actually not true. It's interesting that even in the Bible, in Proverbs, when Solomon talks about immorality, that he does it from the voice of a parent. Have you noticed that? How does he start chapter 5, 6, and 7 as he's talking about immorality? He says, my son, be attentive to my ear. So he takes a parental voice. Now, I don't know if this is literally his son or just he takes that voice because he knows that voice is a powerful voice and needs to be used. It's interesting, there was a study done where they asked young people, who would you rather learn about sex from? And they gave various possibilities. You can learn about sex from your friends. You can learn about sex from the media, from in class, maybe by reading books. And one of the categories was from your parents. One of those categories. What would you guess that they chose of all those possibilities of where they would like to learn about sex? Well, actually, 9 out of 10 said they would most like to learn about sex from their parents. Now, would you guess that? You probably wouldn't, and you probably wouldn't from the way that teenagers and young adults act. They generally will not broadcast that fact. As working with young people for many years, I'm aware of the fact that parents think that their young people don't care at all about what they think. And young people care much more than they're willing to let on. They just don't want to let you know. But the strongest voice, it continues to be the voice of a parent. And so as we are parents, we need to be talking about this. And also as you work with parents, you need to help them understand the power of their voice. Now, on the other hand, only 1 in 10 said that they had talked to their parents about it in a meaningful way. 9 in 10 said they'd rather hear about it from their parents. 1 in 10 said that they'd talked about it. And here's another interesting statistic, that 50% of kids said it was an awkward conversation. So when you go, I don't want to talk to my young people because it's awkward, well, it probably will be. And actually, it was even more awkward for the young people than it was for the parents. 27% of the parents said it was awkward. 50% of the young people said it was awkward. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing it. And that those voices don't carry. Another report found out that a lot of parents said they talked to their young people about sex many times, but the same children said only a few times. So often we think we've had the conversation, and maybe we think it's because the conversation is enough. But actually, there needs to be an unfolding conversation about sexuality, because there's an unfolding nature to the information they're receiving for the world around them that needs to be balanced by a voice from God's perspective. So everyone else is talking about it. No one else is talking about it from God's perspective. And the voice saying, my son, my daughter, is actually the most powerful voice in a young person's life. So if we got that. So this is really important. So as you think about even your grandchildren or your children, your voice has great weight. You can say things that can make an incredible difference against this flood of immorality and anti-God perspective that they're seeing. So you get the conversation, or the unfolding conversation, because it needs to be more than one conversation. What do you say? Now, we've spent how many hours talking about sexuality this weekend, right? Lots of notes. I've been sitting in the back going, this is great, and this is great, and this is wonderful. So which one do you use? Do you use Stefan's fabulous description from Sweden, or do you use... What of all that wonderful information do you use? And my experience in working with young people for 30 years is you really need a very simple set of things that you cover. Kind of a cheat sheet that you just keep coming back to over and over again, because it's really easy to get lost in this conversation. But in my experience, there's really 4 things that we just need to say over and over again in various ways and keep coming back to. But those 4 things are just incredibly, incredibly important. So are you ready for the 4 things? And actually, this is also nothing new, because you've heard some of this before. Number 1, sex is good and a gift from God. Okay, just starting with that. And we might say, that's obvious, but from the messages that they're getting, they hear that the world says sex is good and we invented it, and God says, no, 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 this is bad. In fact, often from the church, they can have the perspective that sex is gross. It's something that is harmful, it's bad, the message is no. From the world, they get the perspective that sex is God. So it can, the church, they hear sex is gross. The world says sex is God. And we need to say, no, the Bible says sex is good, right? It's good. It was something that was invented by God. And just the same way that several of the speakers before have emphasized that you begin with Genesis and you begin with the idea that this is something that's really wonderful. We have to begin there in our conversations with young people. Second thing you've got to say, sex is powerful. This is not just some minor thing. This is not just like going to a movie. Sex is incredibly powerful, and it can either deeply touch or deeply wound people. You would not believe how many of my counseling conversations with young people have to do about their sexuality and about the woundedness they've experienced because of mishandling in this area. They say that 1 in 10 young girls, their first sexual experience is actually forced on them. and so many have debris in this area because of sex that was done wrongly. So many times I'm talking with a young man or a young woman and about their spiritual case, spiritual situation, and they begin talking about sexual failure. And not just the failure, but the guilt, the alienation, the sense of shame, the ongoing impact. This area is not just a minor area. It's just hugely powerful. I often talk, when I'm telling about this to young people, I talk about a friend of mine who worked in the Czech military. I've worked with young people in the Czech Republic, and I had a friend who worked in the military, and I asked him when he came back from his military service what he did, and he said, I worked with Semtex. Now, any of you have ever heard of that explosive? It was actually invented by Czechs, so the explosive Semtex. It's a plastic explosive that's incredibly powerful. And I just started thinking, what would it be like to be in the military and be able to play with Semtex? You know, you could just say, hey, let's just, you know, destroy that tank. And every boy loves to blow things up. So I'm just picturing how fun this would be to be an expert in Semtex. You know, so how many tanks did you blow up? Did you take down any bridges? What did you do? And he said, well, actually, I never touched Semtex. I said, well, I thought that was your specialty. He said, well, I was in the military 2 years, and I actually never got close to the real thing. We simulated work with other so we could learn the techniques, but it's so dangerous that they wouldn't even let us touch it. And sometimes now, it doesn't mean we can't touch this area of sex, but they had a healthy respect for the power of this thing that could clear out a roadway or take down a building and could actually destroy the person who's using it and blow off their hands. And so this area that we're talking about is actually very, very powerful. It's a power that can be used for good, for bonding two people together in a one-flesh relationship. And it's also power that can destroy. So I always talk about the power of sex. Sex is good. It's created by God. You know, sex is really powerful. And that power can either be something that God uses wonderfully in your life or something that destroys you. The third thing I always say, I always talk about the fact that sex is precious, just precious, something that's really precious. You know, think of the attention that God gave in Proverbs to this whole area. There's no other single topic in Proverbs that gets more press than Solomon talking to his son about this sexual area. And one of the things he says in it, and this was already quoted, he says, let the fountain be blessed. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always with her love. This is something that's so, so unbelievably precious. And precious things can be robbed or destroyed. I often use the illustration of a camera. When you're talking with young people, you have to kind of use simple pictures, right? And I love photography. I really enjoy photography. And this is a Nikon camera, so it's, I don't know if any of you have been involved in, you know, if you're a Nikon person or a Canon person, okay. This is an important discussion. I'm a Nikon person, got a really nice zoom lens that's got vibration reduction, things like that. I like this camera. Now, it could be that this weekend I need to repair the fence at our house. And I've noticed that some of the boards have come off and it needs to be repaired. So I look around in our shed for a hammer and realize that it's gone. You know, maybe my kids start playing with it or lost it or maybe I left it somewhere. And then I look down and notice that my camera's there. And wow, you know, I look at it and I go, you know, it's got kind of a place where I can grab it hard, right? It's got some nice weight to it. There's a hard surface right here. I wonder if I could pound nails in with my camera. You know, and so I might take it and start. And you know, it works pretty good. You know, not quite as well maybe as a hammer, but you can actually pound in nails. I can fix my fence with this camera, right? It's a great hammer. But after I've used it as a hammer, I have a very expensive hammer, and I don't have a camera anymore, right? Because when precious things are used outside the zone that they're supposed to be used in, then they're destroyed and you can't use them where they're meant to be and in the way that they were meant to be. So something precious, well, I wouldn't let you use my camera as a hammer. Not only that, I wouldn't leave my camera outside overnight, particularly if it's going to rain. I wouldn't just let anyone borrow it. It's valuable to me. It's sensitive in the way it works. And if I don't protect this precious thing, I'll lose it. It will be gone. And so I talk with young people about protecting this precious thing so that it doesn't get destroyed. It doesn't get misused. It doesn't get robbed. It's really about the yes to God's design that gives us a context to the no of the things that would destroy it or take it away. So I always talk about sex is precious. And the fourth thing I talk about is sex needs protection. I'm not talking about condoms right now at this point. I'm talking about boundaries. Boundaries that God has created to keep this wonderful, precious, this good, precious, and powerful thing in its place so that we can experience all that God wants for us. And it's very interesting that these boundaries of marriage that God has created can seem to someone outside of them to be so confining. Like, that's such a narrow place, this boundary of marriage. When actually the space covered by marriage is so large. I mean, think about this. Jim's been married 45 years. I've been married 30. Think of the time covered by a healthy marriage. Think of the sexual activity covered by a healthy marriage. My brother-in-law, when he got to his 25th year of marriage, he went back and counted how many times. I haven't done that ever. But he went, wow, this is a lot of wonderful sexual experience I've experienced in my marriage. Think of the opportunities for sexual expression, for joy. This boundary of marriage is actually huge, right? It's wonderful. It's amazing. Why would you risk this beautiful, wonderful, amazing thing by not putting a fence around it and allowing it to be stolen or destroyed? And why would you allow that to be taken away? So one of the things I say with young people is I say, picture your greatest, your best dreams for your marriage. You know, just start picturing them. Think about them. And then I say, actually, it can be 10 times better than your best picture of it. Marriage can be so amazing. And then I say, picture your worst fear in marriage. And I say, actually, it can be 10 times worse. Like this thing, this potential that we have is actually better than you can imagine. And also, if it's misused, it can destroy you in just very, very deep ways. So those are the four things I say. Do you remember them? It's good, right? Created by God. It's powerful. It's precious. And it needs boundaries in order to be preserved. I've been talking with young people about that for 30 years, and really it just comes around to those four things. We just talk about those four things. Now, how can you ensure that your voice is actually heard? Well, let me tell you three things about young people that you need to know so that you know your voice is heard. Young people are very relational, and they actually don't hear things if there's not a relationship. They just don't. So if it's a lecture, if we're talking to young people, they won't listen. That's why I said talking with young people about sex. And that change in posture can actually be very important. I was talking with a friend of mine who was in serious conflict with his 16-year-old son, and he described some of their conversations. And then I asked the question, where do you have those conversations? And he says, normally in the living room. And I said, tell me how you're positioned. And he said, well, one of us is usually standing. He's standing on his way out of the room, you know, or I'm standing as I'm chasing him. And I said, what's the problem? Well, he doesn't listen to me. And I said, well, how do you try to correct that? Well, and basically he just lectured him, right? And I said, try something different. I want you to ask permission to go to his room. If when he's in there, lock on the door and say, can I come in? And when you, because that's his home, right? And then I said, when you come in, sit on the floor. Don't sit on a chair. Don't sit, because friends sit on the floor in your room. Sit on the floor in the room. And then I said, have a long conversation. Don't make this a lecture. Ask questions. Listen. Because friends have long conversations about this. And so he did that. He went up, knocked on the door, sat on the floor, created a relational environment for this conversation, and all of a sudden he said, my son's listening to him. And actually his son was listening to him before, but the only thing he was hearing was, you're a jerk, from his dad. So Relationship authenticity. Young people can smell a fake so quickly. If it's not true, they'll know. Authenticity and loving leadership. It doesn't look like that, but they respond to someone who says, "I care about you. I care about your future. Let me talk to you, my son." Like is being said in Proverbs. Let me talk to you about this key issue. So those are just some guidelines, but let me tell you the one thing I'd like you to come away from this with is talk to young people about sex, okay? That's actually the bottom line. Like, do it. Don't hold back from it. And talk to them about it in an extended conversation, because things will come up. Make it an open topic, and know that your voice as a parent or your voice as a parent figure in the young person's life is actually much, much, much more powerful than you realize.